Okay, guys, thanks for making it out this morning. You can see we've got a packed house here. But anyway, my name is Seth Davis, and I'm going to be talking about some work that I did with Rich Hofstetter. The title, Interspecific Interactions Between Two Primary Bark Beetles, is slightly different than what's in the program. But this should tell you about what the talk is going to be about pretty well. So when I'm talking about primary bark beetles, I'm primarily referring to beetles that are the overriding cause of tree death. So for the purposes of this talk, I'm going to specifically be talking about dendroctonous beetles. Here we have Dendroctonus brevicomus, the western pine beetle, and Dendroctonus frontalis, the southern pine beetle. So I'm going to be talking about some interactions between these two guys. So in general, these two beetles are thought of as occurring allopatrically in different regions and potentially on different hosts. But in northern Arizona, they actually have a large range of sympatry. Here, the range of each beetle species is outlined, western pine beetle in green, southern pine beetle in gray. And in general, you'll notice that this overlap is over a pretty large area, so any ecologically important interactions that potentially occur between these two guys have the potential to be pretty widespread. And all the studies I'm going to be telling you about today took place in pretty close proximity to Flagstaff, Arizona. Oh, and I should mention that ponderosa pine is the dominant conifer in the region, so we're going to be examining how these beetles potentially co-colonize ponderosa pine. So interactions among multiple dendroctonous beetle species are essentially unexplored in the literature. And we asked two questions. First, we wanted to find out, does co-colonization between these two sympatric species occur with predictable frequency in northern Arizona? And secondly, does co-colonization influence oviposition behavior or offspring fitness? So we addressed this first question with a simple observational study, and we address this second, slightly deeper question with a series of experimental approaches. So in terms of identifying and verifying whether or not these two beetle species do occur in the same region of the same host tree with predictable frequency in northern Arizona, we essentially went out, found naturally colonized trees, and removed bark samples from these trees, just like the one pictured in the background here. And we actually would map these bark samples for galleries of each of these species, and we could calculate the total frequency of oviposition galleries of both species across some 30 or so trees. So the results of this were really pretty straightforward. I am going to take a minute to explain the axis here. So on the bottom, I have percent western pine beetle and essentially percent southern pine beetle also. So this axis represents the species ratio, with percent western pine beetle moving from 0 to 100 as you go from left to right. And although it's not labeled, percent southern pine beetle moving from 0 to 100 as you go from right to left. So this just simply displays the frequency of galleries that were observed in these naturally colonized trees with percent of the total trees on the y-axis. And so we did verify with this simple observational study that there was a significant co-occurrence in nature. Although the western pine beetle did occur independently much more frequently in some 23 or 24% of the trees we looked at, whereas the southern pine beetle occurred independently in only 3 to 4% of the trees we looked at. However, most 75 or 80% or so of trees fell within some intermediate range here. So to experimentally verify whether these guys are actually attracted to pheromones produced by heterospecifics in the region, we performed a very simple little experiment, actually taking the bolts of freshly cut pieces of wood, introducing beetles of each species into these bolts, and then using them as baits on funnel traps to see essentially who would come to them. This was done at 3 or 4 sites. I believe at each site we had 4 traps, and of those 4 traps, 2 would be baited with a bolt colonized entirely by one species. And we replicated this, I believe, 4 times over a sampling period of about 5 days. And the results were actually very straightforward and can be summarized in a single bullet. Basically, In traps baited with bolts colonized by the western pine beetle, we caught about 10 beetles per week of both species. And in traps baited with bolts colonized by the southern pine beetle, we caught essentially no beetles over the entire sampling period or in any of the replications, which is actually rather unfortunate because this makes the use of parametric statistics impossible and the interpretation is a little foggy. But we would suggest this be interpreted with caution, but essentially I would like to say that what I believe this means is that we can verify that at least one of these species is attracted to pheromones produced by heterospecific St. Patrick bark beetle in the region. We don't believe this should be taken to indicate that the southern pine beetle is not attracted to pheromones produced by conspecifics. So the real meat and potatoes of these studies were actually a series of competition experiments that we did. So we would actually go out and find suitable trees and incite the decline of these trees and monitor resin flow as they declined. When resin flow reached a point of basically zero in a 24-hour collection period, we'd begin introducing beetles into these trees, both the western and southern pine beetle, and what we thought were known ratios. And we actually replicated within tree usually 3 to 5 times. So the experimental unit that we actually worked with was a bolt within an individual tree. Unfortunately, you know, we did try to standardize for the species ratios we were introducing, but they did somewhat randomize themselves, which actually proved to be somewhat beneficial for us, and we were able to examine gallery density and species ratios, random factors influencing beetle size, fecundity, and average gallery length. So after we introduced our beetles into these trees, the treatment area is shown basically by this white cloth here extending from about breast height to 12 or 15 feet. So after a period of a couple weeks, we would bring these into the lab, buck them into their respective experimental bolts, and then put these in rearing canisters, collect the beetles as they emerged, and then actually dissect the individual bark samples from these bolts to map the galleries and derive information like average gallery lengths and frequency of the galleries of each species. So now I'm just going to jump right into the results of that. So again, here is the species ratio in terms of percent western pine beetle plotted on the x-axis, moving from 0 to 100% western pine beetle in the gallery environment as we move from left to right, and vice versa for the southern pine beetle moving right to left. So here we have average gallery length of each species plotted as a function of the species ratio. Western pine beetle is outlined by black dots and solid lines. Southern pine beetle is outlined by white dots and dotted lines. Essentially, what you'll note is that as the proportion of western pine beetle in the gallery environment increases, the average gallery length of southern pine beetle significantly decreases, although there was no significant relationship for western pine beetle. So these two graphs are basically the same thing. Here I've shown offspring per centimeter gallery area for each species plotted as a function of gallery density. Let's look up here at the upper left graph. Essentially, as gallery density increases, we see a significant exponential decay in offspring per centimeter gallery area for southern pine beetle. No effect for the western pine beetle. When we looked at the IQR and removed a couple of outlier points, we then note that down here that essentially these two species follow basically an identical response, both significantly following a logarithmic peak function where offspring per unit area gallery is maximized somewhere around 20 centimeters of gallery per decimeter squared of bark area. But here's the really interesting slide. So again, here I have offspring per unit area gallery plotted as a function of the species ratio. And for both species, you'll essentially notice that as the proportion of conspecifics in the gallery environment increases, there is a significant decline in terms of offspring per centimeter gallery for both species. So this indicates that the proportion of conspecifics in the gallery environment more significantly regulated population growth than the proportion of heterospecifics in the gallery environment. And finally, we used average length as a proxy, as a potential proxy for fitness. And you'll note that as variation As we observed variation in the species ratio, it had no significant effect on the fitness of the average lengths of offspring of either of these species, although on average the western pine beetle was always a little bit larger. So to quickly summarize what I just blasted at you, we would take our observational studies to indicate that some of these dendrocnidus beetles do co-colonize shared hosts in this particular St. Patrick region. Also, that the impacts of overposition gallery density and adult ratios affected each beetle species differently, with the southern pine beetle apparently suffering a greater net negative impact in the presence of western pine beetle and not vice versa. And we also did, I believe, show that beetle fecundities were more strongly affected by the presence of conspecifics than heterospecifics. So in this particular case, fecundity was most limited by conspecific density, and fitness was apparently not in fact impacted by variation in the ratio of heterospecifics in the gallery environment. And we believe these results essentially suggest that co-colonization may outweigh the need for interspecific resource competition, and we speculate that niche sharing may be ultimately mediated by host availability and individual population densities. Thank you.
We have time for one quick question.
Seth, you mentioned the benefits of co-colonization. What are the benefits of co-colonization?
Well, what the angle I've been taking on that is, I'm sorry, the question was what might are the benefits of co-colonization be? The angle that I'm taking on that is essentially that if your population density is really low, it can help you overcome some Ali effects by co-colonizing with another beetle species, whereas as an individual population, you may not actually be able to overcome a host.
Thank you.
Thanks.